Let's give it up for Josh. He's going to be talking about Nick Space development environments at Shopify.
Hi, I'm Josh. I work at Shopify. I'm on the developer environments team. For those unfamiliar with Shopify, it's an e-commerce platform. It powers a sizable chunk of e-commerce online. If anyone was here in 2019, you might be getting deja vu right now because a colleague of mine, Burke Libby, was here giving effectively the same talk, Nick's at Shopify. And then we sort of went silent, and internally we backed away from Nick's. And so what happened, Nick's hadn't fully reached kind of a stable footing, and it didn't sort of have like a huge amount of buy-in from leadership. And so then there were some pockets of developers that were like not supported super well. And then there was this big company shift, I think in about 2020 or so, where it's like we're all going all in on cloud development. And since Nick's wasn't really in like totally stable footing, it just got pushed to the side, and you know, the feeling at the time was like, let's just use Ubuntu. Like, surely that's good enough. Let's just do this from first principles. And then, I mean, you can tell because I'm here now that that didn't go amazingly well. You know, there's positives and negatives, but you know, so now 6 years later, we're back. We're doing Nix again, and I hope to sort of share some experiences of migrating over again, you know, what we did a bit differently this time and like what went really well, maybe things that we shouldn't have done differently, and just sort of, yeah, maybe, you know, hopefully be helpful for any company that's looking to move over to Nix. So a quick background on development at Shopify. We're predominantly a Ruby on Rails shop. Most development happens on Darwin, but we have a giant number of developers, and so there's a bit of everything at the company, like a bit of Go, a bit of Rust. It's like really everything, right? And I mean, I say we predominantly are Mac OS. There's a lot of Linux developers as well. I can't share official numbers, but this is a screenshot from Wikipedia. You can probably estimate the number of developers yourself based on their estimate of our employees. Hopefully I don't get in trouble for sharing that. The primary tool that we provide as the developer environments team is this tool called Dev, and it's sort of the single tool that you use to get set up on every project, and that's been at the company since about 2016. So there's a buttload of code bases, and kind of the guarantee is that you can just run dev clone for some project, it'll clone the project, and then you run dev up, and it'll do whatever setup needs to happen for any ecosystem. Up here I've got a kind of an example of a dev YML, and see, it kind of explains itself. You know, you list out some packages that'll install some system packages that could be Homebrew or apt or, well, now Nix. And then, you know, okay, it installs Ruby 3.4.5, it runs Bundler and installs a bunch of Ruby dependencies, and then it sets up your database. It might do some like database seeding and stuff as well. And so, rewinding back to 2024, this was kind of a very pivotal moment for us. We were just really dissatisfied with everything. You know, we had been doing cloud development for about 4 years, and it just kind of sucked. It just never really felt good. And then we moved back. We're like going back to working on macOS locally, and now we're back using Homebrew, and it's like, this just kind of sucks for us as well. We try out dev containers, and like VMs running on macOS also just sucks. There's this whole initiative where we're moving towards a monorepo, and then we've like tried Bazel, and that didn't really work well for the Ruby ecosystem. So it's just like everything sucks. Like, what's going on? We're like looking around. We're like, you know, do we suck? Is the problem us? And like maybe partially, but around this time, the CEO discovers DevEnv. And he just goes and applies it to one of our internal code bases, this project called U2. It's kind of like our internal wiki. And, you know, like it was a really small Nix program. Like, or, you know, like this is basically what the devenv.nix looked like. And it's like, you know, it just worked. And he did almost nothing, right? And he's like up and running on Nix. And like, it was like, this is amazing, right? And he's like just in love. And he's like, org is like, you know, someone's got to sell the vision to get Nix into the organization. And in our case, Devinv kind of did it for us. And the CEO just discovered it on his own and really, fell in love. So thank you. Thank you, Devinv. Amazing. Did an amazing job of sort of selling the vision. You know, what's really great about it is how it doesn't hide Nix away in the background. It doesn't try to just make it like an implementation deal detail. It's really like front. It puts Nix front and center, and you know, and it, people can kind of fall in love with it and kind of progressively get into Nix rather than trying to hide it away. And so we're looking at that. And we're like, man, should we just throw out Dev at this point? Like, we've had our own internal tool for 9 years. Devinv is like amazing. Should we just be using it? And we really did try this for, you know, like a solid month or so, just trying to really make Devinv work. But what we started to realize is, like, we have our own tool. It's existed for about 9 years. It's got a lot of its own kind of legacy, like quirks and implementation details and stuff. And so reconciling all that with Devinv without, like, polluting a bunch of garbage into Devinv would have been difficult. And so what we did instead was we just went and bolted Nix onto our existing tool, Dev. I guess I don't really need to talk about the benefits of Nix here. I'm sure everyone knows. You know, if we're just going to go bolt Dev onto Nix, like, that's what we did last time, right? And that didn't go well. So, like, how are we going to try and avoid it this time, like, just falling into the same pit? And, you know, the big thing that, like, the major reason why it failed last time was probably just due to an overuse of Bundix. For anyone that's not familiar with Bundix, it's the, like, two Nix for the Ruby ecosystem. It takes all your gems and turns that into, like, Nix, builds it into the Nix store. And that's amazing for when you're packaging a Ruby application, but not super developer-oriented. And I'll give a tiny background on building Ruby dependencies here. A lot of Ruby dependencies will include the, like, vendor C code, have their own sort of ad hoc build system around test. There we go. So they'll vendor their own C code. They'll put some sort of ad hoc build system that's of kind of like nebulous quality, and then you'll compile that just locally on your machine. Most of the time, that is not pre-compiled. So, like, on our main code base, that can take like 10 to 20 minutes to compile on a developer's machine. And so that's slow, and so you can definitely set the attention to pull that into Nix, but for a very important subset of developers, compiling is a feature. We have a team of folks at Shopify that will work on Ruby, that'll work on Shopify's dependencies, and so they're, like, working at deeper layers of the stack. And so when we first pushed it out, we were using Bundix, and we sort of pulled everything into Nix very aggressively, and we set up this hard boundary where it's like, if you want to work on Ruby or you want to work on Shopify's dependencies, like, you're kind of screwed, right? Like, you don't really have much recourse. And so that really angered a lot of people, or, like, a very important subset of people. And, you know, the Ruby team is amazing. They really are, you know, they're just hacking on every layer of the stack. They really embody, like, your dependencies are your code. And so on this reattempt, we wanted to make sure that these guys were happy. So our strategy was to avoid Bundix, meet developers where they're at. We just didn't really want to, like, change too much. Ideally, people should kind of be able to continue using Dev as they know it. Just run Dev up, and then it'll just, instead of using Homebrew, it'll use Nix. And we wanted to migrate projects incrementally. We've tried doing, like, wholesale migrations where, like, flip the entire company over to a new thing all at once, and that hasn't gone super well. So we really wanted to make sure, like, projects could migrate one at a time. And then, you know, we do eventually want to include or to use Bundix and start pulling some of this stuff into the cache, but we just wanted to make sure that we sort of, like, step into it, and at every point that we're pulling things in, we have ways for people to opt out so that if they don't want Nix pre-compiling these things, that we can, so that they have a way to opt out and hack on the thing directly. And then the last thing that we really wanted to do was just prove it out on Shopify first. It's kind of our biggest, largest, baddest code base. You know, we didn't want to just, like, focus on toy examples and, like, get that working and then try and push it out into like harder and harder problems. We just wanted to like make like run into a brick wall as fast as possible, prove it out, and see if it worked. And so that's kind of what we did. I'll skip over this. You know, there's lots of decisions to make when you're starting out, and the short of it is like none of it really matters. And it's important to understand like what you're picking when you're picking like your cache and your build farm and your front end and yada yada. But like as long as you're not painting yourself into a corner, it's not too hard to pivot from this stuff. So I'll quickly go over the pipeline of like what it looks like to get to use Nix on a user's end. So you just run dev up, and then you know we take your dev YML, we translate that basically into a set of sort of like a spec that we then pass over into Nix. Basically, like it's slightly different, but we're effectively just running Nix print devenv with that spec. We pass that JSON into Nix. Nix then turns that, it'll like print out all the environment modifications that it would make. We then translate that into this thing called shadowenv, which is kind of our version of durenv, which just like tweaks your environment variables for you. And then we do everything else. So it's sort of like that sets up the foundation with Nix. And then, you know, then we go install services and like seed them and yada yada, install dependencies. Yeah, so it's really quite simple at the end of the day. And so that got us to like the seems to work phase. And then we moved on to trying to get this working on Shopify. And then we hit like a lot of hell. You know, there's just like complications everywhere. Like we need to set up LD library path wrappers for FFI for Ruby so that it can find all the dependencies. And then like a lot of a lot of programs will just say, if macOS, you know, you're using BSD sed, and like call it a day, right? And that doesn't work if you have a GNU sed, which I think is what Nix provides by default. You know, and then we're hitting like clang things and yada yada. And then we should really be sandboxing gem installations that, you know, when it's compiling, we know that it's not accidentally hooking up to Opt Homebrew. So we turn that on, and then we discover like another giant pile of problems. And so then, you know, we'd fix all that stuff, we'd update Nix packages, we'd update Shopify, everything's broken again. So we just do this on repeat for like a month or two. And eventually everything stabilizes. I mean, the main lesson here is that sandboxing is really good. Definitely use sandboxing. I mean, it's pretty obvious. On macOS, you know, use sandbox exec. On Linux, I don't know, like mount namespaces or bubble wrap or something. I think there's a lot of options here. So yeah, we've stabilized our main code base, and then we're looking at rolling it out. And the first thing we did was we just got Nix installed on every person's machine and just providing a couple basic tools like Git. And this actually had its own like mini hell with like code signing problems and like background services and stuff if you're running Git maintenance. So do this part progressively. Like every stage of the rollout should be progressive because or like incremental, because you'll be surprised at some of the hellish things you'll run into. But yeah, so we got that stabilized, then we do the rollout in Shopify, and ultimately it just looks like Nix true in the dev YML. This is the whole PR. That comment I think was from like some shitty bot or something. So we roll it out in Shopify, and then we hit user environment hell, which is just like every person at the company having some crazy setup that just kind of happened to work. You've got like some users that are like accidentally setting diald library path for some reason, and then Nix seg faults. You're like, what the hell's happening here? And then, you know, you've got some people setting their gem configs differently, so then it like compiles differently and like forces linking to homebrew, and like just chaos everywhere. Just like so many like little things that happen to work. You know, NeoVim people have like their own package manager, I guess. You know, it's just like endless problems. So it was a good like month or two was just spent like bashing out all these things and like adding more and more warnings into our program so we could like flag when people are doing things that are probably wrong, but like we don't totally want to just block them from doing things. So yeah, I mean like you know, once you're rolling things out, when you're dealing with user environments, you don't want to like assert people, but you definitely want to like detect things proactively and flag when people are probably doing something they shouldn't and warn them, because a lot of people just don't know. Also, being able to opt out of Nix, to sort of like get to the important problems first and then deal with individuals as we had time. Because like, there was like a lot more problems than we had the bandwidth for. So Opto was really nice. Then we did the third part, which was so the background, we were doing this whole monorepo migration. All our code was piling into a single code base. And so we decided that everything coming into the monorepo has to be in a namespace environment. And that went like insanely smoothly, actually. Because we had started with like the hard problem, when we went to roll out to everything else, like, it basically just worked with like no changes. So that was pretty awesome. The hardest part was really just like chasing down people for reviews. That was like a lot of work, actually. And so, yeah, that's kind of where we're at today. We've sort of reached like solid footing. We've got a lot more buy-in from leadership, right? We definitely have a much lower support burden than we did on Homebrew. Before, we were just getting like a constant stream of breakages that we'd just be like dealing with on live support day to day. So like the accessibility for Nix has been amazing. Then we've got like more platform support. There's just like all sorts of benefits. So I guess key lessons here, and this is like the theme of the whole conference, right? Build bridges. And this kind of sounds a bit like Porco speak, but like, it is important actually to get buy-in from leadership and stakeholders. And also to sell the vision, really. Like, just make sure that everyone is on board and like kind of understands the problems that are getting solved and like where you're headed. And people understand there's like a brighter future ahead, right? People are a lot more interested in jumping on. And then, to try to make sure all use cases are covered, and sometimes these can be hard to find, right? And so if you can't find them, make sure you have fallbacks in place so that like people that aren't supported have some way of working temporarily while you can hopefully catch up and fix their stuff. Prototyping things that are hard is good, sandboxing is really good, we have tons of extra stuff coming up now. We're starting to work on a next like build system for our monorepo. Playing around a lot with like trying to move this one box device for what we build locally. We really want to make sure that people can continue working just at like every layer of the stack, and we don't want to set up like hard boundaries on what makes this providing. There's tons more stuff that I don't have time to get to here. We're hiring, so if you're interested, please reach out. My manager's email's up there. My stuff's up there too. I might be less responsive, sorry. Feel free to reach out to talk or talk to me here if you're interested in joining. Big thanks to really like everyone in the community. It's been amazing. It's so much easier to migrate this time than it was.